When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to the Shrimp and Sivret Show, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
What's going on, Danny Sivret?
Robbie, what's going on, buddy?
Good to see you again, my friend. Welcome back to the third episode of the Shrimp and Sivret Show. We got a lot of meat to talk about today and plenty of juice to talk about from the playoffs. One thing, what do you think about all these game sevens in the first round?
What a viewing opportunity for hockey fans, right? Like, so was it five game sevens? A couple of them went to overtime like that. Like, for me watching, that's playoff hockey, right? Like, it was obviously some of the teams I thought were going to win more handily than others, but you know, it just shows the parity in the league and how close every team is when it comes to a series. But wow, what a good time to be sitting on a couch watching hockey.
That's sick, man. I don't think anybody really saw that many game sevens coming. You know, everybody had some blowouts and this team's going to smoke that team. You know, Calgary, I thought would smoke Dallas put up a hell of a fight. LA Kings put up a hell of a fight. You know, there's a lot of teams that really dug in their heels and weren't going to go away very easily. And then, you know, to touch on the sore topic or the kind of seems like what was inevitable is Toronto getting bounced, you know, at home game seven. You know, what did you think of that series? What did you think? I have some of my own thoughts, but what did you think about that last game, game seven? Do you think it could have been maybe coached a little bit different or played a little?
Well, I mean, it's still at the end of the day, a tight game, right? I just think it's so hard to win in hockey when you have so much money allocated to a few players, right? Like you have to have a deep team. You either have to have some production from entry-level players or lower salary grade players. I thought they did a good job in running Matthews and Marner a lot. Like, I think, you know, I earned a lot of respect for Matthews during this series. Like he plays hard. He strips guys. He's a threat on the ice all the time. And I think he showed that he is obviously one of the top players in the world. I think Tampa maybe focused too much on the matchups. In my mind, if you're gonna run Matthews and Marner every other shift, then Tampa, what they did was they tried to match that Cirelli line with them.
Yeah,
and I think Toronto's winning that matchup. And when you're getting it over and over and over again, I almost wish that Tampa would. I mean, they won, so maybe boo on me, but I almost wish that they would have had another line to go to come back with on the Matthews line, so that Matthews and Marner are fatiguing themselves, but they're facing off against a fresh line every other shift type deal, versus you're matching up against another Tampa line that's also fatigued. So it's just a battle of two, you know, pretty gassed lineups or lines. And I think that's where Toronto sort of took the advantage there. But in the end, Tampa ended up winning. I don't know what are your thoughts? I mean, I'm from Toronto area, so it's obviously all over the news and people are waiting to hear what the press conferences or the exit meetings are going to be like and what if heads are going to turn or what. But you know, I think there was a lot of hope for a lot of the Leaf fan base, and unfortunately it's sort of no different than what the last few years a bunch of years in a row have been like.
I think I'm surprised more about how the almost all the D pairings were spread out in minutes, and not seeing, you know, some top D men playing heavy minutes, which kind of what I'm accustomed to and seeing and getting those guys, you know, on the ice as much as possible. It's kind of spread out and it spread the load a little bit. I think I would have liked to see Giordano play a lot more minutes. You know, he only played, I think, 19 minutes in the last game, and he's an unbelievable shutdown guy. He's a Norris Trophy winner, 2 years ago, and his game's been really sharp since he came to Toronto. So I don't know, just some of that, maybe in the back end, maybe cutting the bench down a little bit and one game winner takes all sort of setting. I'm going to load up as much as I possibly can and not play that spread out, you know, minute game. But that's one thing that stuck out to me. And then I think the great thing for me watching was Nick Paul coming from Ottawa, big pickup at the trade deadline. I got a chance to skate with Paulsy down in Naples, Florida in the summer times. I'm super happy for him, but he showed up big. He's, you know, he's an Ontario kid and got to score 2 goals in the game 7 scenario. That was pretty neat, but it was a good series. I didn't know if you had any thoughts on how if that could have been coached any differently, or, you know, if you would have managed the bench any way differently.
I don't know. I think, like I said, it ended up a 1-goal game in game 7, right? It's almost like coin flip. And I think he kept going back to the well and running Matthews and Marner as much as he possibly could. Right. I think, you know, when Point went down, I thought that maybe is going to change some things. He's a big role player but he plays a big role for Tampa. So I thought maybe it was in Toronto's, you know, best opportunity to succeed there. But in the end, Tampa ended up winning their proven team. Like you said, they made a couple good pickups at the deadline, Paul being one of them. It obviously paid off for them in game 7. So it'll be interesting to see what they're like moving forward, if Point can come back, and if Vasilevskiy plays a little, you know, stronger than he did in the first series. But that the next series up for Tampa should be a thrilling one. It's unfortunate that, you know, I almost would deem that to be a conference final type matchup, but the way that the playoff format is, Florida's got to play Tampa early on. So it'll be an exciting series to watch for sure.
Did you see Stamkos's interview after they beat Toronto?
I heard
sympathizing, and like, really, you can almost see him feel the pain for these guys, the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you know, he basically stuck up for them, saying how good of a team they were. And, you know, it is really tough. He's right. It's very tough to win in this league. And Toronto, I mean, Tampa's such a stacked team and experience now with back-to-back cups. And, you know, they got their licking against, Columbus? I think it was three years ago when they lost. They had that unbelievable regular season and got spanked by Columbus in the first round. So that was kind of their, you know, roadblock to get over. Now they seem to be rolling pretty good. But I thought that interview was pretty interesting. And the way that he was, I don't know, he was almost sticking up for those boys, you know. He
knew Toronto area kid too, right? And probably trains with a lot of these guys in the summer, right? But it's tough to win. You know, we saw it in the first round how close every series was. Like, you know, what sort of surprised me was the Carolina Boston series. For whatever reason, I thought Boston was going to win the series. Just, you know, they seem like they're proven winners, and I just like that Bergeron line. And then I watched that game 7 pretty closely, and Carolina can just smother a team. Like, they play a really structured game. Like, obviously Brendan Moore's done a really good job there, but Boston never really got much going. Like, they were trying, you know, it's third period, you're down by a goal or two, you're pressing, and it's like they couldn't mount anything. It was just like,
Game Carolina, 6 was unreal. Game 6, Carolina was smoking them. I mean, running shift after shift, cycle after cycle, after cycle after cycle. And then I don't know what happened. The penalty train just turned on, and they took like Carolina took 3 or 4 penalties, excuse me, in a row. And that changed all the momentum. Boston came tumbling back, but that was 5-on-5. Excuse me. Carolina was all over them. And they have this unreal system where they play the cycle game, and they get to a point on one side of the ice, and once they get kind of feel like they're going to get trapped, they just whip it around the wall and they just keep it going. They have these, call them simple outs, simple anchors, where again, the guy just has to, he's down the corner, he's about to get pinned, he just rims it around, and they have relief on the other side. And they just kept running Boston through it. And I think we talked pre-series about that. I liked Carolina in that series. I thought they were younger, fresher, and they have a little more grit to their game than than I think given credit for. You know, they're not a major market either, so they don't have a ton of coverage and you don't see a lot on them. Boston's obviously a lot better covered, bigger market, hockey market, so to speak. But I just felt like Boston was, they're coming, they've played a lot of playoff hockey, and those guys, that core group is, again, they've seen a lot of hockey.
So you think Bergeron's done?
I don't think he's, I don't know. I don't think he's done at all. By watching his game, he's still got it. He does a lot of stuff very well, and he's still producing points, and he's got chemistry with Pastrnak and Marchand. I don't feel like they had the supporting cast, to be honest with you, that they did in those championship years. You know, little things like Gregory Campbell. I thought he was a big factor in their championship team. You know, he played. I didn't see someone like that in a, you know, role position standing out. Do you think of anybody on Boston that would stick out in that capacity?
Not really. I think DeBrusk, I think there was, you know, early on in the season, I think there was talks of him maybe getting moved or something. And then obviously didn't get dealt at the deadline. I think he played a pretty significant role for them. It, you know, big power forward player who can score. I thought he was, a pretty good force for them out there. But what about your Rangers? I thought Shesterkin was going to play a lot better, and I thought it was going to be, you know, a close series, because down the middle, Pitt's unbelievable, right? You have Crosby, Malkin, Carter as your 1-2-3 centers. Like that's a good group, right? But they ran into obviously some goaltending issues, which I don't think it didn't really hamper them all that much. But I sort of expected Shesterkin to sort of steal the show and be, you know, a guy that has the, you know, the opportunity to bring his team to the Stanley Cup Finals potentially, but they ended up getting through, and you never know what'll happen here on out. But I just was sort of expecting a little bit more from him, right? But
yeah, they're a weird team to me. I don't know. They don't seem strong to me, the Rangers, to be honest with you. They got through here and they got a big win over Pitt, a big series win over Pitt, but I don't feel it, that force coming from them. Like you said, they don't have that solid concrete piece in the goal. That didn't have that vibe to it at all. We'll see what comes of this next series, but yeah, that's one of those things. I think that I'd be predicting them to be out in the second round. They're not firepower. I don't know. They don't have that grit to them. They're not really steamrolling on the offense per se. You know, they're not lighting the lamp up, in my opinion, and dominating. I go back to Carolina, but I love the way that they're playing team offense, and it's rolling. And one guy that's really sticking out to me is D'Angelo, is playing unbelievable for Carolina right now. He's got one of those vibes to him in the playoffs right now. That's, you remember that year we lost to Guelph before the Mem Cup year?
Yeah, four. Yeah.
Remember Kevin Klein?
Yeah.
He scored 3 hat tricks in a 7-game series against us in the playoffs. And that's a little bit of what I'm seeing from D'Angelo right now. He's really buzzing. He's making a lot of really good plays. And, you know, there was game 6. He had an emotional, not to say emotional meltdown, but he threw a stick at the empty net and everybody was kind of, you know, jumping on him and this, that, and the other. And then he comes out in game 7 and plays lights out. Like, he played sick. He had a one timer from the top of the key, went shelf, made a ton of good plays. But anyways,
Think he plays any different now that he's going back to New York, where they sort of said, see you later? Or do you think it sparks him even more?
He shipped himself out of there. I mean, he couldn't stay off of Twitter, you know, he couldn't stay off of Twitter. That's unfortunate. You know, what a place. So I think it's probably better off for him to be in that, again, not as big of a market where there's a huge spotlight on you. But, and also they got Fox there in New York right now. So I think
he's good.
He's really good. He developed into a hell of a hockey player. I think in the beginning they were shoving him into the role, and I could see that personally. That's my opinion. And that's how players get to these positions. They get somebody that believes in them deeply and just is going to keep using them. And that's what happened there. I think with Quinn, he just believed in the guy and he kept giving him the shots. In the beginning, it was a little bit sloppy to me. And then it was kind of like, where is this going? And all of a sudden it just clicked. And he was like making brilliant plays, controlling the pace. He's really smart shot selection, doing it all. So
I watched them quite a bit. Just, I thought it was an interesting series, and I know he doesn't have the body type, but he reminded me of, like, remember Pronger Edmonton days, where like it was just like he would sort of pause the puck and then just make like an outlet pass to like an opportunity, you know, like just pinpoint passing to like right from inside of his own blue line to a stretch guy on the move you know, a 3-on-2 opportunity. I just thought I didn't really watch him that much during the season. And then just in that series, I was like, holy cow, this kid is a lot better than I had originally thought.
Yeah. That's the thing. You wonder why he got second chance after what happened in New York, but it's clear he's a hell of a player. And it's just about, you know, the other stuff, cleaning that up and focusing on hockey. But yeah, your point that we were black aces in Edmonton watching Prongs. It was sick how good he was and how smart he was. But and the thing is like how simple it looked. You know, it really did look super simple. He wasn't going end to end and dangling.
No, hardly moved. Like, just like a pocket passer.
Yeah, he paused time, and he paused everybody else that sort of on the ice, and he paused time and then made the right play. Calculated, boom, hit the right guy. So it was sick watching that.
Fernando Pisani. Is there any
Fernando Pisani? He was on. Yeah, Fernando hit the hot streak that year. Remember, he had 13 goals in the playoffs. Yeah. That was sick. And Ole Rolston was unbelievable.
Yeah.
What a guy. Dwayne Rolston stood on his head. That was being part of that. You know, we didn't get to jump in and play any games. But being in the city for that time was unbelievable. That building, Rexall Place, was the catwalk was shaking when we were listening before the anthem. It was so intense. It was sick. Those guys came.
Okay, so now we're talking Edmonton. Let's go. Who do you got? Edmonton, Calgary. Like, how's that? That's going to be wild for anyone who's out in Alberta, right? Like, it's dream scenario.
They better get they got the National Guard. They better get the National Guard ready. I don't know if they have that. Is that the same thing in Canada?
We have Mounties. They have Mounties out there. Mounties,
you better get the Mounties. You better get the horses ready. I think it's going to be so intense. I mean, this is, everybody's been waiting for this. And I remember, I don't know if you remember or not, but I remember in training camp back when we were there, I don't know, 05 or 06, maybe 07. And in training camp, I remember the coach saying something along the lines of like, our success this year is going to come through the battle of Alberta and how we do against Calgary. So, I mean, this rivalry, this blood has been boiling for so many years, and it's going to be so intense. It's exciting. They get to this point in the playoffs and get they have two pretty solid teams. Calgary's got a bunch of studs as well. I mean, I know we got Draisaitl and McDavid, arguably the two best players in the world right now. And then you got, you know, Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Tkachuk, go down the line. I mean, they got some studs there as well. I mean, Johnny Gaudreau and Tkachuk both had 100-point seasons as well.
Yeah. I think Calgary's going to be tough to beat. I think they're going to play a real, you know, their coach sort of breeds at his blue-collar style. I think it's going to be a more smash-mouth type game than what Edmonton saw in L.A. But, it'll be – for sure I'm watching that series. Like, it's going to be pretty intense. It'll be interesting to see how they try to tame the two big dogs in Edmonton there. But Calgary's got horsepower as well, some depth. Again, they made a couple decent moves at the deadline, and their goaltending has been pretty strong. And they peppered the hell out of Dallas, right? Like, the goaltender in Dallas was really the only reason I think that they stayed alive for seven games worth. But it'll be interesting to see if Edmonton can get the same sort of output from their goaltending that Dallas did.
Get the riot police ready. It's gonna be a gong show.
What about the Florida? Like, Florida, I think is like a really big powerhouse team, right? Their top three lines are deep. They made great pickups at the deadline and Drew. I think the Sherratt pickup was a really solid play for a depth defenseman who, you know, has had some experience and plays that big physical game. What are you sort of predicting there for the Battle of Florida?
I like Florida Panthers a lot, to be honest with you. I like to piggyback off what you're saying. They're a force to be reckoned with. And I didn't really like Tampa, to be honest with you, in that first round. I thought they showed a lot of weakness. I thought those first two or three games, they were sloppy, and it was weird. It was really weird. I think, you know, that, well, the game two, they battled back, they won a big game, but it didn't have that Tampa Bay firepower to it, look to it, in just my opinion. I don't know. It looked like they were a little bit weak. And I like the way that Florida's rolling. And I think there's a lot of great momentum there. You know, they're coming from not really being anybody to now being a powerhouse. So that's a little bit different. I think it's a new energy for that organization, for that group. And I think they're just, they have that, how do I say it? It's almost like naive cockiness to him. And I like that about him. You know, I play with a guy like Mackenzie Weegar. Weegs doesn't, I don't, how do I say this properly without saying it wrong? But he doesn't, you know, he's not going to feel the pressure. He just goes out there and he's like, wow, he just loves hockey and he's super excited, young, cocky. And the situation, I'm sure he understands the seriousness of it, but he just has that youthness to him and he's going to go out there and be a, you know, kind of a wrecking ball, so to speak. That kind of energy, I think, is big down in Florida for the Panthers. I'm sure they're just getting used to having the building full, having packed home games. But I don't know. I like the way they're playing, the way they're rolling. Barkov is a very good player.
He's good. He's good, this Barkov guy, man.
I couldn't believe it. I remember I saw him for the first time. I was skating with David Bolin in Florida. I was driving over from Naples to Fort Lauderdale to skate in the mornings with them. It's actually how I got my gig up in Portland. I was looking for a job, and I just said, Bolte, I'm going to come skate with you guys. And I went every morning, drove at 6 o'clock in the morning, drove over there to skate with those guys for pre-camp. And sorry to get to a long story long here, but I remember getting on the ice with Barkov. And in the beginning, I was just like, man, this guy seems kind of like lethargic. Like, but he was out there literally going maybe 15%. So I didn't see it. You know, I was like, man, he's kind of putzy, you know?
Yeah.
And then the season turned on and I was like, holy shit, this guy is so good. He does everything good. And then when he turns it on, he does everything at an elite level. He executes, his execution rate is just sick.
What I like being, you know, in the coaching position is like his ability to like back check and stay above the puck defensively and strip guys. Like, you know, you usually get like a higher octane type forward and, you know, maybe a little bit lazy. This guy is not like he wins every face off. He back checks, he back pressures the puck. Like he as a coach, you're like, wow, this guy, I would love to have this guy on my team. And then conversely, I think the trade for Drew, you know, that's one of the first things he said when he got there was like, I want to play with this guy. Like, you know, like, and Drew again, is obviously a smaller ish player, but biggest heart in the world, competes like hell, wins, draws, like great vision. Like he's a guy that I would like to win a cup at some point. Like he's worthy of it. I think he's a talent and an undrafted, I think he was undrafted into the O, right? Yeah. I don't know if you knew that or not. He's an Ontario boy. Yep. And ended up going and playing in the Q because no one picked him in the O, right? But what's that?
Late bloomer.
But still good.
Like the side pieces, like Verhigi is playing unbelievable right now. Yeah. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. I know he works with Brad Wheeler and he's been pumping.
He's from my hometown. High school. Yeah, same high school. But yeah, he was, I think he was like 12 points in the first round. Like everything that's Fernando Pisani, like everything he was touching was going in, but he just looked like he was on a different turbo boost level out there too. Like he just was an engine that just kept going all the time, but it'll be a tough series for sure. I mean, allegiance a little bit on my side would be leaning towards our buddy Corey Perry in Tampa, but it'll be talk about parity again. Like it wouldn't surprise me if a good majority of these series all go the distance or close to, right? Like it's
going to be tight. I put a tweet out the other day, but I was like, man, this is a great time to be a fan with all these game sevens. And I said, what about the escrow for the boys with all these game sevens too? It's for business talk. I mean, it is good for the players. I'm sure nobody, if you want to talk about that side, but it is good.
We never touched on St. Louis, Colorado, but I think that's going to be a tighter series than what people think. Like obviously Colorado is a force, but I just like the way St. Louis is built. Like they're a heavy team. Their D are active. They're coached well. O'Reilly is like arguably the best shutdown guy in the world. Like, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this series plays out. Cause it, you know, I think everyone sort of counts St. Louis out based on, oh, Colorado is going to be in the finals, but I don't know. It'll be, I think, a lot tighter than what we think.
Yeah, I agree. They're a proven winner, and they got a lot of good pieces. And yeah, we'll see. I think how it's going to be really pivotal how MacKinnon acts or reacts to getting, you know, maybe shut down in St. Louis, tightly checked, and see what that response is, because he's obviously a huge piece to them. Losing that or shutting, if St. Louis shuts him down, it really shuts down a big engine for that team. So how he reacts to that, I think, is going to be pivotal to the series as well.
Yeah, no, I think I'm with you. Like I just like the way, I've been coached by both of those coaches. They're both elite coaches. Obviously their teams are in the position they're in, but I just, for some reason, like the way St. Louis is just built. Like they seem big, heavy, hard to play against. And that's, it's tough come playoff time. It'd be interesting to see how Colorado's young D handle a little bit heavier squad in St. Louis.
Yeah. I love the way the game is being played right now. The playoff hockey. I don't know if you've noticed, for me personally, it's gone. It just, how it changes in the playoffs, it goes back to the old, kind of old school game of like grind it out in the corners, you know, cycling. During the regular season, it's, the trend has changed so much. It's a track meet. It's just a big track meet. Everyone's going 100 miles an hour all over the place in the regular season. Then the playoffs come. And I think for me, I was talking about the other day about, you know, Corey Perry. That's why he shines in this time of the year, because that's his game. You know, the track meet game is not Corey's game. He's not, he doesn't skate 1,000 miles an hour, but he's super smart and he knows how to get out of those corners and attack. And in the playoffs right now, it's just fun to see it go back to that and have that piece of it. That's where the art happens, running the cycles, running picks, running plays off each other, making reads. You know, during the course of the season, again, with that track meet sort of thing, the windows of opportunities are so small because things are going so fast. And now when we see this in the playoffs, I really enjoy watching it, because you can see a play develop out of a cycle, out of that sort of situation. You see what's about to happen. Again, to kind of compare the two, during the regular season, it's like, go, boom, boom, it's in the net. You're like, what the hell just happened? How did that just go in? Like, how did that play actually, you know, come to life? And now it's getting more like that. You can sort of read the plays and see it. So I really enjoy the style it's going. And then when you're talking about St. Louis being that big body team, I think that plays very well for them, because that Colorado is a little bit of a, you know, run and gun track team. You know, McKinnon fires up the ice, and then once he gets in the zone, then you got Cal McCarr, who's a magician all over the place in the offensive zone. He's super smart, knows every piece of the O-zone. But it's, we'll see how that plays out. You know, if St. Louis controls the puck more and keeps it in the other team's end, obviously that sounds like Captain Obvious, but that's probably a huge factor, and they have the ability to do it.
Yeah. And maybe to hybrid into our bring it to the table aspect, I want to bring communication on the ice as a topic. And I don't know if that plays into the fact of players being on the ice together for a longer period of time. And then that's why maybe come playoff time, you see a lot more cycles and interchanges and things like that. But I wish that there was a way to view it more as a fan to understand and grasp that communication that goes on the ice. Like, the guys are speaking, talking all the time. Like, you know, here, over, low, wall, net, like, you know, you bump it back to a rim, goes into the goalie, and the goalie's got his face into the glass, like under pressure, and he's getting barked at, like, whether it be up, over, wall, rim, leave it, like, but you don't really get to pick that up as much on like when you're watching, right? Versus having been there, or even, you know, seeing a practice. There's no music, there's no nothing on, and the practice is always loud. Like, guys are calling for the puck over. Yeah, like it's a vocal game, right? Like, we always talk about it being a fast-paced game of chess, right? But there's just so much that goes on that you can't view in your own eyes. You need aid of your line mates or D partner or even the bench to help out. And I wish that there was a way to capture it for the fan base, right? Like in especially speaking as a coach that coaches 15-year-old kids hoping to get drafted into the OHL, like a lot of these guys come into the season and, you know, practices is like, we're on mute. You know, to get them that, and whether you say the right thing or the wrong thing, just something is better than just saying nothing, right? Imagine the puck getting dumped in your corner and you're going back for it under pressure and you just don't hear anything. You're like, oh boy. You know what I mean? Like, I gotta make a play up here out of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
And I just think the communication piece for players listening and obviously for the fans to understand how vocal some, and whether it's players getting mic'd up and they can sort of do a little segment on that, more less about the chirping, more about the actual talking of communication on the ice. But What's your thoughts on that as far as like communication and sort of being with your line mates for a long period of time?
Yeah, that's a huge piece of the game is helping your teammates out, calling for the puck, sort of let them know where the play's at, what's coming or what's available. I think communication piece is huge and probably the part of say why they don't like it, because we all have trucker's mouth and it's every other word is F or whatever. You know?
The game's so fast though too, right? Like,
yeah,
the game is so fast now that, you know, you almost have to communicate what you're doing before you, because the window for a passing option is closed off, or it's a short period of time to be able to have that open. So I just love, like, you know, listening. If I can get down close enough that I'm just above the glass so you can hear, you know, players call for the puck. And I think like the art of that is unbelievable to watch.
Well, it's crazy. Like you said, the speed of it's so fast and it's hard to process because it goes so fast. To be able to communicate and think and put it all together, basically walk and chew gum is tough in today's game, to be honest with you. It's not, you know, you don't have 3 or 4 seconds to communicate, see it. First of all, process it, communicate it. You just kind of have to know where each other's at, and just little verbal cues are what they are. It's not like there's full sentences and like, hey, you got a guy coming down the left side and you got to, you know, it's more like, yeah, right side. Boop, yeah, no left. Yeah, coming here, change, whatever. It's like very fast cues. And that's on, you know, the high level guys to be able to process exactly what those verbal cues are. It's tough. And I think it's funny because we had this conversation just the other day with the men's league guys that I skate with here. They're like, Shrimpy, we don't have a clue what you're saying when you start talking like hockey talk, like half wall, you know, goal line. Yep. Net front. No, bumper. You know, like when I started using cues, they're like, we don't speak that hockey talk. So we have to go over that together before we can understand what you're saying, you know. And the other thing is that it's English and they're Latvian. So there's, you know, translation problem, but there's also the fact that they don't really understand hockey language. You kind of take that for granted that we, you know, we live in that space so long. You do know those things like, you know, rim, net front or whatever, but, you know, leave it for D cues with goalies, like these little cues that you've kind of gone through, you know, years of practicing or years of going over with your teammates. So, and communication is a huge piece of it. So, yeah, I think it's important for young kids, especially. And once you start, I think once you start communicating and once you get comfortable doing it, what to me, it means that you're really comfortable on the ice. You understand the ice surface. You understand what's going on. You know, that's the thing. If you don't know what's going on, you can't talk because you don't know. It's a blur in your mind. So it's, what are you going to say? What's going on in your head is blah. I don't know. So when guys get, you know, that's the thing, when they start understanding the game a little bit better, they get more comfortable with that communication because they're confident in what they're saying. They know what to do. They know what to say. They know how to give their teammate a cue. And that for me is a little bit where guys get a little bit more in their comfort zone.
Yeah.
To help out.
I try, like I run the pro skate in the London area with a lot of, you know, a lot of high end guys. And I always try to get the younger kids who are, you know, still playing minor hockey or on the verge of OHL or playing in the OHL to come out and sort of spectate one of these pro skates. Cause like, you know, Drew Doughty is just barking, like squawking all the time. Like it's, you're just like, shut up. But that's how he plays. And it's like, whether it's a 2-on-1 transition drill where he jumps in the play, like everyone in the building knows that he's calling for the puck or that he's jumping up. Right. I just, it's an art that, you know, as a player that is now a fan, you sort of appreciate. You just wish that the fan base could somehow absorb that in a viewing model. I don't know how that could come of, but it's something that I think is so cool and unique with our sport, you know, almost more so than any other sport, because it's, our sport is very reactionary, right? And by communicating it helps with, you know, knowing where players are and just getting that comfort, like you said, comfort zone out there where the game will slow down for you a little bit, even though it's so fast, hyper fast, but it slows down when, you know, you're hearing voices of your own teammates all over the place, you know, sort of dictating a little bit what to do with the puck. But yeah, that was just my segment of, you know, bringing it to the table is communication. I touch on it a little bit in our next little section when we go into a video breakdown. I talk about, you know, the communication with the defenseman, but what's about for you? What do you got for bringing it to the table, buddy?
Couple things. And first thing I want to bring to the table is almost a a celebration and a congratulations to Dustin Brown on his 18-year career coming to an end in LA and playing all 18 years in LA. An amazing career. Great guy. Came from Ithaca, New York. And I remember growing up.
Where's that?
Syracuse Stars. Where's Ithaca? Yeah. Actually, they got Cornell. Cornell's in that area, neck of the woods. So, but yeah, he was kind of playing high school hockey and just in Ithaca, like youth, you know, whatever, not even AAA. It's just like travel hockey. And my dad actually saw him play one time. And my dad like brought attention to the Syracuse Stars. Like, you got to see this kid. He's a stud. So Dustin came to Syracuse and we actually got a chance to play on a line together. He played split season with us, Bantam Major. And then he played split season with us in high school. In 23 games, him and I had 66 points each. So it's safe to say that we hit it off pretty good. And anyways, great guy, amazing career, amazing story. He was, you know, his plans were basically to play high school, play just Ithaca travel hockey and see where it went. And it turned out to be an amazing professional career. Won some Stanley Cups, was a captain, a great leader for a long time. So I want to say congratulations to him, an amazing career, him and Nicole. I know the family well, so we'll leave it at that. Hope he enjoys retirement and we'll see what he does next. And the next piece I wanted to bring to the table was the world championships that are going on right now. And what I want to talk about is the difference between how the European teams, European players view the world championships compared to North America. I feel like there's a ton of national pride, a ton of pride in general for these teams and these players that go there from Europe. And on the North America side, I don't feel like there's that much emphasis on the world championships. And it's a big stage that's going on right now. And I just want to bring it to the table and have a discussion about it. See what, you know, you guys are in Canada. I'm over here in Latvia living with the pride and the, you know, the national pride and the, you know, basically the care that they put into this tournament. It's a big deal to them. When Latvia wins a game, the country goes crazy. I don't think it's the same there in Canada, is it?
No, probably not as big. I mean, obviously the time change is one aspect. The other one would be a good chunk of our Canadian, you know, elite players are either still in the playoffs or opting maybe not to play in the world championships based on injury or recovery. I think in Canada, we view it almost as the next grouping of players who will be elite, almost like a developmental. Sounds bad, but it's, yeah, you know, we always send over a good young group of up and coming stars to sort of gain experience. And a lot of them obviously graduate from there to go on and play, you know, at the Olympics, if it's allowed for Team Canada. But it's for whatever reason, it's not as viewed as strong, whereas like the Olympics or even like the World Juniors is of greater care, I guess, in Canada. But it doesn't take away the fact that you're still playing for your country as a player. And it just, for whatever reason, it just doesn't get the coverage or notoriety, I guess, that you probably get over in Europe. And also, you know, you're speaking of Latvia, like those guys probably practice together quite often and you might have a couple NHL guys come over, whereas the Canadian and probably the American team are just a cluster of guys that have not been able to advance in the playoffs. And it's like, okay, guys, we're a team now, right? So maybe they're a little bit more of the team element on the European side. But as far as viewership goes, it's obviously the time change would play a little bit of a role, but for whatever reason, at least in Canada, we haven't really adopted that the tournament as like a big marquee tournament for us, even though it's obviously great hockey. But yeah, for whatever reason, it's not as highly viewed or thought about here.
Yeah, I've got a chance, obviously, being here on the time slot, being in the time zone, so to speak, maybe an hour, I think an hour off from Finland. But it's been great hockey. It's like really high-level hockey, very competitive. And again, just I thought that piece was worth talking about to see the difference in the how much pride the European teams put into it or how much emphasis they put on it compared to, I say, us from North America. It's totally different, you know. And I get asked that a lot, too. I'm actually like, that's what they say. What do you think? I'm like, well, to be honest with you, they don't really care. You know, some guys choose not to come. And the guys that do come, they kind of maybe pick their answer on where it's going to be. You know, well, it's in Berlin, cool city. Yeah, I'll go. You know, if it's not, then it's weird how that is, though, that difference in kind of, again, emphasis on that tournament. But it is great hockey. You see some guys make the jump to it. You know, Matt Barzell's at the tournament. I think maybe he had a not so great year on his behalf or like to his standards. And this is a chance to get some different hockey, you know, join that world championships and play some high level hockey, get some different views than he would with the Islanders maybe. I know, go back to our buddy, but Pears joined it the 1 year. I think it was really a cool medal for him to add to his locker of them with the world junior. I think that was the last one he needed to win to get the five gold medals. So pretty cool that he got that, but yeah, it's interesting to see. And again, a chance to see the games are very high level. So it's interesting that there's not that much interest back home for those games and so much pride in it as it is here. Yeah. So that's what I got for the table today. Yeah. Dustin Brown's the highlight of it. What I got today for the clips and for the teaching points are power play face-off setups. And it's from Team Finland against Latvia. And I really liked what Team Finland does here. They bring four guys up to the face-off, meaning there's on the right. So the face-off is on the right side of the goaltender. Finland has one player on the wall on the right side, right on the hash marks. And on the inside, they have one player on the hash marks forward, and they bring their D down. And what they're going to do here is basically this is protecting against a loss. And when this puck gets lost, they have that guy on the wall. The player on the wall is going to jump right away and put pressure immediately on the defending player from Latvia. The inside guy on the faceoff is also going to jump at the same time. So they have two guys that are going to hound this puck and hound that defenseman. And one thing I want you to take note here in this clip, and it's something to understand as a coach, and if you're going to run this power play faceoff setup, is the key thing in my mind here for this clip is that the Latvian defenseman is a left-hander. So the faceoff is if we're looking from the offensive side to the right side of the goaltender, that defenseman on Latvia is a left-handed player. So when he goes back to get the puck, he can't just rim it. That's a big factor in this setup. And when you're implementing it and you want to use it, this is something to take. This is a no or a key to focus on. If that's what you're playing against, this would be a great setup. So as the clip plays out, Latvia wins the draw, and we're going to see what happens here. We got the guy on the wall jumps, the guy on the inside of the faceoff jumps, and the third guy that's up there, which would be a D-man, he's going to go now behind the net, and he's going to close off the Latvian guy's outlet. So we can't go D-to-D with that puck, and that suffocates the play. And we'll watch as this plays out. You'll see the guys get their good jumps off the draw. As soon as the puck drops, they jump forward. The third Finnish guy is going to go behind the net, and he's going to seal that play off, and he's not going to give them an out. So Latvia tries to bump it D to D. You see we have two guys on the one Latvian D. Again, the third Finnish player is closing that out, suffocating the play, and they create a turnover here. And I just thought that this is a really good play. Now they get puck. They get puck control, and they got the play set up in the offensive zone. And now we're going to see another example of this, a great example of this, same exact setup. And this is a great key for individual players to pay attention to. This is something I talk to my wingers a lot about, is on the faceoffs, get the jump. Be ready. Watch the referee's hand. As soon as the referee's hand starts to drop, you jump. When you jump, get your hand off your stick. You want to use the reach, the max reach you possibly can in these plays on the faceoffs. You're looking to just get touches on this play. You want to disrupt the flow of the puck, and you want to stop it from moving. You're not looking, you know, if you can go in there and get full control, don't get me wrong. Obviously you do that, but your first reaction is to jump. And the next one is to use your reach. We're going to watch as this plays out. The inside guy gets a great jump. The guy in the wall gets a great jump. They suffocate this defenseman. And we'll watch as this plays out. The inside guy's stick gets out, gets extended. He pokes it off the Latvian guy's stick so he can't go D to D with it. And now they're suffocated in the corner. And what I like here is number 64 from Finland, Granlund. He's the centerman on this draw. He now jumps in to support it, close off the wall, and Latvia has no outs. And we're going to watch as this play plays out. This turns into a goal almost immediately. Big part of the game, 3 minutes left on the power play. They suffocate it. They don't let him exit the zone. The play comes out to Granlund, who is the one that suffocated the wall, and he winds up sniping. So this setup, this power play setup, is a really effective one if you know how to execute it. And I think it's great how Finland does it. They have two different options off of this. The one that I just explained is they have one guy on the wall, two guys on the inside. And the second variation of this is they have two guys on the wall, one guy on the inside. You know, what you're going to see on this setup is the guy that's lined up right on the hash marks, his job is immediately as the puck drops is to get in there and get contact on the PK defending player. The second player that's lined up right behind him comes up and picks up any loose change. So where this goes wrong, this setup goes wrong, I've seen it happen before, is the guy that's on the hash marks decides that he wants to go in there and make the play. He wants to go in and get the puck and make the play. He's got to be really understanding that his job is to go in there and create contact. That's it. Let the second guy get the puck, because when he creates contact with that defending PK player, he ties him up. And that's where that second guy gets to come in and have all that loose area, that open room that's now created from nobody else being over there. So we're going to let this play out. You'll see how it happens. First guy gets a very good jump. Number 64 is going to come in here and get the puck, and he's going to have time and space to create the setup. So this is the two different variations that I think is good for both coaches to understand and players on the individual side of it to understand what you're looking to do here and how to execute this on the power play faceoffs.
All right, just a component here talking about communication. My clip here, I have Nashville, Colorado, and Nashville dumps a puck in Colorado, and Colorado's under immense pressure here. So as the video plays out, the puck goes into Eric Johnson, who's in against the boards. His eyes are facing the glass, unknowing what's behind him. Nashville's done a really good job with F1 in cutting the ice in half, F2 going down the strong side wall, and a high responsible F3. What's open is the weak side of the ice. But how does he know that? His partner, right? Byram here calls for the puck, gets it easy out of a great forecheck by Nash, but a really smart job by Colorado just evading a hard forecheck. But what I really wanted to talk about here was the vocabulary or communication level that goes on with, if it was just an F1 on the attack and not as aggressive as what Nashville has played here, where we call it piggybacking. So imagine the puck is dumped in the corner. Johnson is going back for it. He has a Nashville player F1 on him, will be the second player on the puck. And then in this scenario, it would be Landeskog would be the third player into the pile. Okay. The third player, knowing that he could be the eyes for Johnson, can now shoulder check both ways and realize, okay, one option, I want the puck to go this way versus the other way. And Johnson can't really tell because he's under so much pressure and he's pretty much facing the glass, all the plays behind him, right? So as it plays out, you'll see that if there was just one forechecker, there would be an opportunity for Landeskog to call strong side or wall to bump the puck up the strong side of the ice, and then he can just curl into it and they're out of the zone. The other option would be for him to call a back or behind, where Johnson knows that he's going to take this hit, allow their F1 to finish their check and essentially take himself out of the play so that Johnson can just lay the puck behind the forechecker and Landeskog can scoop it up and go the other way with it. The third option would be for Landeskog to call weak or net, where he wants the puck to be bumped a little bit towards the weak side or behind the net so that he can now skate into it and obviously allow Nashville's player to take himself out of the play as F1, finishing the check. Johnson would know that his job is just to absorb the check and distribute the puck one of the three ways to the communicating forward or support valve, and Colorado will be easily out of the zone. In this scenario, it's actually Byram who calls for it at the weak side, and you'll see he receives the pass, moves it up, and evades Nashville's strong forecheck. So just another way that communication can help players on the ice, even when you don't know what's going on behind you, your teammates can be the voice of reason and be able to dictate which way the puck is going to be going.
I like what you said too, Danny, caring about your line mates or caring about your teammates. I think looking after them, I guess, you know, when you're making these calls, you're making this, you know, using this communication, you're trying to help them. It's helping the team. It's helping everybody, you know, heads up or whatever, guy coming, you're going to get smoked. But I guess it would depend on how nice you were to me the day before, if I was going to tell you you're about to get smoked or not. You're this guy. He sewered me yesterday. I would have let him get just run from behind today.
I don't think I ever gave you a suicide pass. So I'm trying to think back.
No, it was mostly you just high flips and off the glass.
Yeah. That's what gets you guys. Chase it down. I try to mark up those white boots of yours every once in a while with a high ankle pass, but I think I was pretty good to you.
The only time I think, the only one I can think of is when you almost scored on our empty net when we scored that penalty goal against Bellevue. That was
I knew what I was doing. I was 50 minutes. Resetting the puck. That's all.
Yeah, off the side of the net. That would have been a nice.
I knew never went off the side of the net.
It was
did
off
it?
The side of the net. Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
it was we have to get the deep on this.
I called for it. I was like, "Holy, what the hell is he doing?" He almost buried it.
Well, I knew the goalie was out. I was just making sure that we could reset on a break. So the story is, it was a delayed penalty, right? It was a delayed penalty. We're at home, and I sort of was up in the rush a little bit, and I sort of recouped just outside the blue line. And I think I one touched it back towards our own end. I think you're making it up that I hit the side of the net, but I know it was close. It probably would have hit the trapezoid area, but like
you hit the side of the cage. And after that, we proceeded to put together like 30 straight passes and we scored after about a minute and a half.
It'd be nice to get the video. Too bad we didn't have HD cameras back then, instead of everything's by 4:4:3 ratio or whatever. Yeah. Low def. But the good old days.
McLeod was out there chucking sauce. Everybody was chucking sauce. It was a hell of a yeah. So you guys, we'll try to post it for you guys so you can see what I'm talking about. And I can for once prove Danny wrong and that he did almost bury on our own net.
You know, speaking of Mark, he's been doing well, like in his gigs that he's been doing online. Like every time I watch him on TV, he cuts up the game well, he speaks well. Like for a guy that was a stallmate and we used to play Xbox all the time together. He's my D partner. I wouldn't have guessed him to be that guy, but he's done an exceptional job at it so far.
We got to get him on. He tweeted out the other day. So I was hoping to get him on for episode 3 because he wore 3. He obviously had a little attachment to it, but we swung and missed on that one, but maybe we can reach out to Mr. Mathot. And you're right. He was not so much the outgoing guy in junior and I don't think pro either, but he's just doing phenomenal with the broadcasting and podcasting.
You know, it's funny. It was, after we had won the Memorial Cup, like a couple years later in pro, I forget who it was. If it was, it might've been like Weber or it was one of the Western guys. And they were like, shit, we knew we were in trouble when the first game we played Crosby's team, right? We were down 3-1 and we ended up coming back to win 4-3 in overtime. And Mathot scored 2 like really nice ones, which is sort of out of character of him. But I think it was Shea Weber. He was like, shit, I knew we were in trouble because they were in the tournament as well with Kelowna. And he's like, I knew we were in trouble when your shutdown D is going short side and winning over OT games. Like,
two of them.
What
both
a game.
Of them were shelf, short side blocker.
Yeah, that was, I still remember the break, well, sort of the breakout into a 2-on-1 in overtime and the whole building's yelling two. I think he's going down with, he might even go down with pairs.
Yep.
And he just like looks him off. You know what? I'll finish this myself. But yeah, that was obviously a fun game. That was a fun time. But speaking of taking care of your buddies, our buddies at PointsBet Canada, which is live in Ontario, I've been donating to them a little bit. I was doing parlays for a little while, trying to hit, you know, swing it for the fences. And then more recently, I just started to do a little live betting or just one games. And I've starting to recoup back what I gave them, but I'm going to bet. I know this might not be well received by our friends in Edmonton, but I'm going to take Calgary in this series. I don't know what your take is. I'm gonna watch the games closely, obviously, and probably throw some money down in live.
A series bet though, you're going to bet the series. You're not going to bet every game.
Well, I'll bet every game too. Yeah, like, but I'm I think I've become more of an opportunist when I'm. Action. I'm playing. Well,
I shouldn't be putting peer pressure on you like that. I'm not.
No. Well, I mean, it's not like I'm putting a boatload on it. I'm just doing it for the love of the game. Okay, right. Yeah. But I just like watching the live scores, and hopefully, you know, a team that I'm wanting to win goes down early and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to hit this now. I'll take my chance with it. But it's been working for me recently, and everything prior to that wasn't. So I'm going to stick with my live bet, and hopefully Edmonton takes an early lead and then I can attack on Calgary.
Fair enough. They just came out. I saw today they had Wayne Gretzky had a quote, something like that. Calgary, he sees Calgary beating Edmonton. People, the social media is probably jumping all over him. Unfortunately, I actually made a movie with Wayne Gretzky when I was a kid. So it's sad to see him get attacked by the mob, Twitter mob. But I'm going to stay away from that series because I don't want to get jumped. And if, if we ever do wind up back to this, Calgary Stampede, or if we wind up down on White Ave, I don't feel like getting shit pumped. So I'm going to stick with the Carolina and New York series. And I'm taking Carolina in game one. They just made a mess out of Boston, and I could see them. I see them steamrolling on New York. So I like Carolina. That's my pick. And good luck with your swing there in Edmonton, going against the team that drafted you. I'm not going to call you a traitor, but hey, do you?
They traded me too, so they don't want me. Maybe they don't want them now, right?
Yeah. After they taped your bottom hand to your stick, they couldn't
shoot you out. Oh, the good old days. Anyways, Rob, good catching up again. We'll connect again next week. Awesome.
Sounds good, Danny boy. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Shrimp and Savrette Show. Don't forget to subscribe to the Nation Network YouTube channel to watch all of our video breakdowns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.